today, we're going to the book of Job. Now, we're just going over highlights of the book of Job. Not in great detail. I highly suggest that, you know, when you look at the book of Job, if you kind of ignore sometimes the vowels, that is the italicized ones, and ignore all those italicized words, just read it like it's a statement. A statement. A statement. Because basically when, I don't know if any of you have ever been in an argument before, but when I've been in an argument, I don't think of my grammar. Making sure I'm fully understood by every preposition, every noun, every object of the preposition. I just make a statement. And the person understands the statement completely without all that grammar. Basically, the book of Job is written in a different kind of poetic form. And when you read it in English, they try to add other words to make it more flowing, like a story flow. But these three men are quarreling. And Job is quarreling back. And I don't know if you've ever been in an argument with somebody. It's not necessarily the most pleasant time to be. You feel very uncomfortable. Or you're always angry. So what we're going to talk about today, I'm going to run back just a little bit. Remember I talked to you that each one of these three men have a paradigm. That is what I'm saying is they have a lot of people have different kinds of paradigms. But mostly we're talking about one aspect of this center of these men. Their center is, remember they were sitting there for 7 days? You know, a lot of things are going through a man's mind, or even a woman's mind, for 7 days, saying nothing at all, just being quiet. I don't know if I lasted that long myself. But nonetheless, a lot of things going there, and they're going to try to give him answers, but they couldn't give him answers until Job spoke first, remember? And then they started, trying to prove that he had been wrong in his approach. Now we're on the third guy. That's in chapter 8. We won't go through the entire chapter because we went through there last week. But this is Bildad the Shuhite. And in verse 4, just real quick, this is his shifting or how he views the eternal creator of heaven and earth. If your sons, verse 4, have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgressions. If you would earnestly, Job, if you would earnestly seek Elohe and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you, Job, were pure and upright, surely now he would awaken for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place. Now Job lost everything, remember? So here's kind of real strong words this guy had against Job. If you were pure, and if you were upright, and if you make a supplication to Elohe, really? Well, would you, have you ever been accused of that before? Or maybe have you ever looked at others and have said to them or about them, if their heart was pure, if their heart was right, if their heart was of God, they wouldn't have all of this trouble and crisis and bad damage to them, right? So we have, this is a lesson for us in our time and our life, as well as it has been for mankind ever since this publication of Job was ever out for people to read, how God wants us to look at each other. Now I'll go book the 9th chapter. Now Job gives him an answer. He gives Bildad the Shuhite an answer. It's not a pleasant one. Okay? Those of you who have followed me long before. Verse 1. Then Job answered Bildad.
truly I know so.
I raised my voice, you know why? Because they were angry with one another. He was arguing with them. I could call and say, and truly I know so. And now can a man be righteous before Elohe, if one wishes to. If I did it that way, you could do that at your home, right? But the emphasis here is they're arguing. If you ever argued quietly, in silence, and never said anything, well, no, not really. You raise your voice. Truly I know so. And how can a man be righteous before Elohe? If one wishes to contend with him, he could not answer him. One time out of a thousand. That's a lot of times. You get a thousand. He's here. Elohe is talking. He says a thousand things. You'll get to say one thing. If you do say one thing, you may say, I repent. Or something of that nature. Of course, he says that, we all know this stuff. Do you know that? Of course you do. You know that. You understand that. And of course, Bildad was telling Job he doesn't understand who Elohe is. He understand who God is. Because if he was pure and supplemented, he gave his answer. If you pray to God, God will hear you, right? How many times you have heard that? Or may have said that yourself to someone whom God is putting a test on. Remember, the book of Job is not a test on Job's wife. The book of Job is not a test on these three men. The book is not a test on the sons of Job. The book is not a test on the daughters of Job. The book is on a test with a man named Job. We learned something about him, right? That he was a very powerful, mighty, wealthy king. Yes.
Okay, I'm on verse 3. If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. I'm wondering what him is him? Who is him?
If one wishes to contend with, let's say, the Creator, he could not answer him. If you're going to contend, challenge God. If one wishes to contend with the Creator, with Elohe, if you wish to challenge him, you wish to question him, you wish to ask some questions whether or not he is doing the job right, your chances are 1 in 1,000. That's basically the boiled down to in civil English. Don't contend with him. But yet, Job is contending with him. We've already read how many times he is angry with God. He's angry with God. But God's not giving any answer. Yet. So, I'm sorry, what? About Job himself. But we have to understand what is it that God is looking at, and what is that God wanted for Job to see and understand, and what did Job need to repent of? Have we had the answer yet? Now, all these guys have answers so far. Bildad? Well, if you are pure of heart and you're upright, and you did make a supplication to God, he would automatically protect you. Really? Well, see, it's an assumption. Because God said in the very beginning, did you notice Job? He has integrity. He's upright. He's decent. He's got a rightness about him. And his first friend said, Job, you've done wonderful things for people. You've gone out of your way to help those who are oppressed. You go out of your way to make sure those who are in need, you give them what they need. You protect them. He had the largest army. No one could challenge him. But of course, God did. By and through Satan. And even Job said, talking to God, said, why have you put the serpent over me? And he was angry at God because guess what happened? Job understood that all his ills, yes, it did come by the authority of God and by his power. But he doesn't know why. And he starts challenging God. We won't read all those challenges later on in the book. We're not going to go there. I want to drop down now. He talks how powerful God is. Look at verse 7. He commands the sun, and it goes, and it does not rise. You know, there was a time it didn't rise, right? Remember the time it didn't rise? The longest day? It just stood still. It didn't rise. That side of the world was dark. They didn't see any. It didn't rise. It stopped. That's pretty powerful things. And he can seal off the stars and the lights he won't see. You won't see the heavens. You won't see those. He can do that. He had power ultimately to do what he wants to do. Verse 11. He's talking about God now. This is Job telling this guy who says, you don't know God. If you knew God, you'd pray to him and he'd hear your supplications. Pretty strong accusation, right? Let's continue on. He says, now, if he, mean Elohim, goes by me, I do not see him. If he moves past, I do not perceive him. If he takes away, who can hinder him? Who can stop him? Now, Job, what was taken away? Everything except his own life yet. Wow, who's going to stop him? That's how powerful it is. And he says, now, who can say to him, what are you doing? You can't say that to God. You can try, it's worthless. He will not answer you. Basically, he will not answer you. He doesn't have to answer your questions. He doesn't have to answer your doubts. He doesn't have to answer any problem you have whatsoever. Talk about man, he had a lot of troubles. I think Job had a lot more troubles than most of us in this entire room have, combined all together. He had a lot of troubles. That God took away, and Job couldn't say, what are you doing? Well, in a way he does later on. Do you understand what I'm saying so far? Verse 14, how then can I answer him, choose my words with him? What kind of words can I possibly say to him if I contend with him? What is it the picture about? What is the way I can talk to God and contend with him and challenge him and say, what are you doing? What am I going to say? How can you tell against God? Verse 17. For he crushes me with a tempest and multiplies my wounds without cause. That's a pretty hard thing to say, right? But right now, Job has no idea why all this is happening to him. Because he can't find sin and transgression and iniquity within him. And we already read earlier where he challenged God and said, why don't you just forgive me? Show me my sins, show me my iniquities, show me my transgressions, that I can do something about it. No answer. Have you ever thought about God that way in your life? Why don't you just show me what I'm doing wrong? And he's silent. He was silent to Job. And that's a real hard time. Remember, 7 days sitting there saying absolutely nothing. And then Job finally started to talk. And all his friends began to give him accusations and judge him and rule and make all sorts of accusations against him, which sounds logical to human beings. Job, this is brought upon you because of your sins, your iniquities, your transgressions, and your heart's not pure, you're not upright, you're not righteous. Pretty strong accusations, right? He, verse 18, will not allow me to catch my breath, but fills me with love, kindness, gentleness, mercy. What does he fill him with? Bitterness. Now, that's pretty hard for us to say, how can you be bitter against God? I'm not asking you this question for you to answer the question. Have you ever been bitter against God? Did he answer you? Or does he just let you be bitter? Well, in this case, with Job, he let me be bitter. I don't think he answered. I don't think there's a place in the Bible where he answers someone's bitterness. Don't answer them. Now, bitterness can lead to one thing, or one major thing, that is rebellion. But Job was never accused of rebellion. Though we may look at his anger, his frustrations, his words, his, quote, hostility toward Elohe, to say he is in a state of rebellion. Because we would look ourselves that way if we did that, wouldn't we? Man, I'm in a state of rebellion if I speak that way to God. But here, Job did. Job was never called a rebellious person by Elohe. No. Verse 27. The statement now changes. You have to be careful how you read this thing because it's real clear. Verse 27 now, he addresses Elohe. He addresses Elohim. If I say, I will forget my complaint, I will put off my sad face and wear a smile. I am afraid of my sufferings. I know that you will not hold me innocent. I am condemned. Why then do I labor in vain? If I wash myself with snow water, that means pure water, and cleanse my hands with soap, yet you will plunge me into the pit, and my own clothing will abhor me. So he knows he's going to go where? He's going to go in the pit. He's going to go in the grave. Now, we all know that. No matter how clean you are, no matter how times you wash yourself, physically or even, quote, spiritually, the same place that a most wicked individual could think of, that ever lived on the face of the earth, you're going to be there also. Where are you going to be? In the earth. No matter how righteous you are, no matter how holy you are, or how rotten you are, or stinking idiot you are, when you die and the other guy dies, you go to the same place you came from. The earth. How are you going to say to God? How can you challenge God on that one? Verse 10, chapter 10, rather, real quick. I'm going to try to get through my fourth part. I got about 12 parts of the book of Job, by the way. I'm just highlighting the things that I can try to get to because I find the book of Job very important for us in our modern time, saying, well, it's just an old book. It's about something else. Don't understand what God's doing. Don't understand what Job is doing. Don't understand what the three friends are all about. But when you reread them, you can recognize yourself. Maybe you've made those statements. Maybe I've made those statements that the friends have made. Maybe I have made those statements that Job has made. Maybe I have been angry with God, but want to admit it. But what does the book of Romans say? while we were at war with God, what did God do? Well, he won the war. But he delivered us out of that warfare. And so we're seeing here a man named Job who, in a sense, is at war with Elohim. And will Elohim win? Or will Job win? Chapter 10. Verse 1 is, my soul loathes my life. He hates himself. Have you never known anybody who says, I hate myself? Verse 10, I will say to Elohim, do not condemn me. Show me why you contend with me. Remember the previous one? How can a man contend with God? You don't. Now he says, you have contend, you're fighting me. I'm not fighting you, you're fighting me, and you're winning. That's what he basically is saying here to God. Seems good to you that you should oppress, that you should despise the work of your hands and smile on the counsel of the wicked. That's a pretty strong word, don't you think? Would you dare say it to God? Job did. I'm not saying you should follow his words, I'm just saying we're going to find out what Job's sin is at the end. Maybe next week. I hope to get this thing through. I'll wait to the 12th, 14th chapter. Verse 7. Although you know that I am not wicked. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement. Well, that's the truth, right? Job knows that God knows that he is not a wicked person. Yeah, can Job sin? Yes. Can Job make a transgression? Yes. Can Job do something that's inequity? Yes. But is Job wicked? No. Because his history, as the first gentleman talked to him, that he was a man that went out of his way to do pleasant and wonderful things for people who are oppressed, who are in need, who do need his protection. And he had an army big enough to protect them from any other enemy coming to their location. He had a very powerful and large, he was the greatest king of the East. That is in the land of Edom. Now we look here, and he says, and is no one who can deliver me from your hand. You know I'm not wicked. And there's nobody can save me, keep me from what you are doing to me, what you have done to me already. Your hands have made me and fashioned me, and in intrinsically unity, in perfect unity, yet, you're destroying me. Those are pretty strong words, right? From Job toward God. Verse 13. A lot of things he's talking about here. He says, and these you have hidden in your hearts. I know that this is within you to do what you're doing to me. He doesn't pass the buck. He knows where it came from. If I am full of disgrace, see my misery. Yes. If exalted, you have hunted me like a fierce lion. And against you show yourself awesome against me. Ye renew your witnesses against me. You have increased your indignation toward me. Challenges and war with me. Job is in sad shape, don't you think? Job's in sad state. Verse 20. Are not my days few? Cease! Leave me alone! That I may take a little comfort. He's talking to God here. In other words, we use it to say, God, I want you out of my life. That's basically how we would use it in modern language, right? Get out of my life. I don't want anything to do with you. I've heard people say that, by the way. They're hurt. They're pain. I do not know why. And I don't need to know why. All I need to know is, it happened to Job. And do I know the sins of Job? Well, I've read the book already, so I have an idea, but I wouldn't have pictured at this point in time what they were. Yes.
Do you think God would do that? Do you think he would do that? I mean, if you said that? Seriously.
Yes.
You do.
Verse 11, chapter 11, rather. This is real short. I'm not going to spend too much time in the 11th chapter. I don't think I need to go too far. But this is another friend. Then Zophar challenges him again. Should not the multitude of words be answered? And should a man full of talk be vindicated? Should your empty talk make men hold their peace? And when you mock, who should not one rebuke you? Pretty strong words, right? Go to straighten Job out. Have you ever thought about straightening somebody's attitude out? Were you successful? You might think you would be, but for you have said, verse 4, my doctrine is pure and I am clean in your eyes. Oh, but that Elohim should speak and open his mouth against you, Job, that he should show you the secrets of wisdom. Very strong words, right? That's enough about him, right? Just same his paradigm, how he looks at God. And how he looks at Job being punished by God, that God is that kind of a God. Now, chapter 12. I'm going through this real fastly because I want to be able to wrap this particular section up before I go to the very last man that talked. Because I don't want to spend an awful lot of time in the book of Job. The purpose here is to find out, I think, firstly speaking, find out Job and who he is, what he said, well, his problem was not so much the other three men. The other three men, I represent friends. He called them friends. They were friends. And he says, some friends you are. These were close friends. They weren't just casual, once in a 7 year talk together. I mean, they were friends. Now, he turns around, Job, 12th chapter. And so he answers the guy, you know, the last guy we just talked about. No doubt you, the people, and wisdom will die with you. When you're dead, wisdom is gone. That's a pretty cynical remark, right? Snapping back at it and says, but I have understanding as well as you. I not inferior to you. Instead, who does not know such things as this? Yelling back at his friend, you know. The third one. Verse 7. But now ask the beast, and they will teach you. And the birds of the air, they will tell you. Or speak to the earth itself, and it will teach you. And the fish in the sea will explain to you, you who have wisdom. And he just made a cynical remark, you know. When you're dead, wisdom dies with you. If your wisdom is just absolutely worthless, I don't want to hear it. That's basically another attitude you might want to say. Does Job have an attitude? We could say yes. Verse 13. And with him, I mean Elohe, wisdom and strength, he has counsel and understanding. If he breaks down, it cannot be rebuilt. If he imprisons a man, there can be no release. If he withholds the waters, they dry up. If he sends them out, they overflow the earth. How can you answer such a God? See, we don't look so much in our modern times that God sends water to flood the earth. We think, oh, it's just the way it's been for 7 billion years to the 10th power. We don't give God any question. If we have a drought, oh, that's just one of those, you know, cycles. And God says, I'm not going to send the water. What's going to happen? It could dry. It could turn dry. We say, oh, come on now. Don't be a fool. God's not that way. Really? According to Job, he's that way. Verse 22. He uncovers the deep things out of darkness. Or uncovered, rather, deep things. He brings the shadow of death to light. What does that mean? In your world, what has God brought to you? The shadows of death to light. What do you think that phrase means? You are vulnerable to death. You think you're in good health. You don't think life is a wonderful world. I want to live my life to the fullest. And God brings forth death. Remember the man, the parable that Yahshua talked about, who was so wealthy, he wanted to build another Shiloh. And what was brought forth to him? Oh, you fool, death. Does that make sense to you? Job understood it. We need to kind of look at it and say, yeah, God, you can take my life anytime you wish to do so. You're the one that numbers the months. That Job says so. I think maybe next chapter. Job said to God, you're the one that numbers the number of months that I live. It's later on. It's not in this one. Sometimes we could kill somebody before the months were numbered. Well, that's murder. But when God takes someone's life, it's because the months are finished for that person. God has a plan. We may not understand it to the fullest, but basically that's what both belong to. He makes nations great, like the United States of America, right? And destroys them. Roman Empire made it great, destroyed it. Nebuchadnezzar made it great, destroyed it. Alexander the Great made it great, destroyed it. Persian Empire made it great, destroyed it. That's his pattern. That's God's pattern, not man's pattern. We think men do it. No. He's the one that makes the nations strong and mighty and powerful, and he's the one that destroys the nations that's strong and mighty and powerful. We say, oh no, God's not involved with that at all. According to Job, yeah, he is. Later on, we'll find out God said about Job, he says, Job is right about me on how I act and what I do things. Yes.
How can we interrupt the Father's timetable for anyone dying?
How can what?
How can we interrupt his timetable for whoever he says, your time's up?
Good luck.
What's his name going to come over and pop you?
Timetable.
Your time's up.
We don't. You can't change that.
I understand that.
Yep. Oh, you as an individual can take someone's life. But when God takes a life, you can't stop that.
No, I understand that part, but I'm saying, he allots us a certain amount of time. And how do I know that I'm not fulfilling his will for that man's time to be up by shooting?
Because God says, thou shalt not murder. Okay? That's yours. Your time may be up. No, he didn't create mankind for the purpose for them to live forever. That's pretty hard for us to actually picture. I know what many people believe about Genesis chapter 2 and 3. Be careful with that. Because he was made from dirt. He was not made from spirit. And you can take it from there. And forget anything I just said. And now Job's talking in 1st chapter 13. I'm going to finish this one. I can't believe it. It's going to be kind of cool. Behold, my eyes have seen it all. What you know, I also know. I, not inferior to you. I'm not that dumb. I'm just as smart as you are. I see the same things you see. I understand the same. These three men, by the way, were called wise men. By the way, they weren't just a bunch of fools. Later on, we'll find out later. They just didn't have an answer. I mean, Job would not have three friends that are idiots. Do you have three friends that are idiots? Do you keep company with three idiots? No, you keep company with friends, right? Now, their friend may not have what you think, and you may not think what their friend thinks, but they're not idiots. Yes.
Their problem wasn't intelligence. Their problem was humility.
Well, it's also Job's problem, too. We'll see that at the end of the book. But God is not out against the three. He's not out to punish the three friends. He only has one or two lines to say about it. By the way, if you want, me to leave you alone, have Job burn something for you. Have him burn an animal for you, and I'll leave you alone. And he did, and God didn't touch him because he went out after them. He went out to try to, quote, save them. He was out to teach Job, and he's out for us today to look back and say, God, what is it you wanted Job to understand? May I come to that understanding? God doesn't do this to every human being. I don't, perhaps it has happened in the past before, but never been written down. I don't know. He said, now, but I would speak to El Shaddai, or Almighty, and I desire to reason with Elohe. I want to talk with you, God. I want to, discuss the problems here. What is my sin? What are my transgressions? What's my iniquities? Well, let's talk about it. That's pretty hard words, right? Well, you may not think so, but Job said it, and therefore that's where it's at. Drop down to verse 19. Who will contend with me? Who's going to fight against me? Who's going to quarrel against me? If now I hold my tongue, what happens? If I say nothing whatsoever to you, God, what's going to happen to me? I perish. Doesn't live, he perishes. And he says, only two things I do not want. I don't want you to do to me. When I will hide, then I will hide myself from you. If you do not do these things. Number one is what? Verse 21. What's the one? Withdraw your hand from me. Guess what happened? He did withdraw his hand from him. And let not the dread of you make me afraid. But that's exactly what God did do. 21. Exactly what God did to him. He made him terrified of God. And he withdrew his hand and let the devil take his course. No protection. If you only wouldn't do these two things, which already had happened to him, then I would not hide myself from you right now. You did withhold your hand, and you did bring me to fear you and be afraid of you. Therefore, I've got to hide myself from you. Now, is there any other time in history that you can think of where somebody hid themselves? Speak. All right. Adam and Eve. Very beginning. Very response. And someone mentioned, I think, Jonah. Jeremiah didn't get very far in his. You can't hide yourself. Ezekiel, to understand a little more about Wednesday, I'm going to cover a little thing about Ezekiel. He hated being who he was, a prophet. He hated it. And he couldn't get away from it. Unlike Isaiah, or is it, I don't remember, was Isaiah the one, burn my mouth? Or is it somebody else? I can't remember. And I'll speak for you. But, sorry, what? Not from God. Yeah, but he didn't hide himself from God. This we talk about, that if you do this, I will hide myself. Okay? Verse 20, huh? Well, it's not hiding in the sense of trying to, that he won't see you. Hide in the sense, I don't want to be seen by you. And I don't want to see you. It's like I'm looking you face to face. I don't want to see you anymore. I'm going to hide my face from your face. I don't want to see your face anymore. That's what that phrase really kind of boiled down to. It's like to say, don't let the sun go down on your wrath. That does not mean the physical sun, by the way. Because someday the sun will set on you. And it will not rise. Don't let your anger, don't die with wrath in you that your son is going down and you will not come back up again. That's what Apostle Paul was referring to when he used that phrase. You have to kind of know those words, what they really refer to. Of course, you know, if you're a realistic person, don't think the word is always literal and nothing else, then, okay, it's the sun coming, the sun going down, sun coming, sun going down, then, okay. Don't get mad. If the sun goes down before it, you're still mad. Oh, now what are you doing? Anyway, it's a funny statement. Yes?
They're just taking everything personally.
Yes!
You know, and that's a waste of time.
A waste of time. Well, in the case of Job's case, let me ask you a question. Something personally happened to him. Lost all his cattle, lost all his donkeys, lost all his camels, lost all his army, lost all his family, and lost his wealth. I guess you'd center it on yourself, wouldn't you? No. He will learn that later, but not now. Yes.
When I lose a child, or I lose a mate, or great calamity upon me, I'm very, very, very sick. Somehow, I don't care about the big picture.
Yeah.
I take it personally. It's real personal.
Verse 23. Someone asked me this question. Here it is. Verse 23. How many my iniquities and sins make me know my transgressions and my sin? Why do you hide your face from me and regard me as your enemy? That's pretty strong words, aren't they? You left me alone. In fact, you did more than leave me alone. You brought your army against me. And you're not even letting me know what my transgression is. You're not even letting me understand what my sin is. You just brought this whole thing on me. And I'm spinning in nowhere. A man with no hope. Literally, no hope. Now, we have great hindsight, and we say, oh, yes, he does. But we didn't. He didn't. He had no idea. Verse 26. If you write bitter things against me and make me inherit the iniquities of my youth, you put my feet in the stocks and watch closely with my paths. You set a limit on the soles of my feet. This is as far as you're going to go, and you're not going to go any farther, Job. You're not going to go anywhere, Job. You're not going to travel. You're not going to go. You're going to stay there until I tell you, get up off your feet and talk like a man. Whew, pretty powerful. Well, I don't think he used those words. He probably used a lot stronger ones. If you'd be like Job saying, just leave me alone. Let me crawl on the ground. Let me be a worm. Now the 14th chapter. See, I'm going to finish. I got plenty. That's great. Thank you. I've worked hard on this thing, tried to shorten it down and said, okay, I want this highlight, this highlight, this highlight. Because next week I'm going to go way into the book of Job. And we're going to hear another person's point of view. Verse 1, 14th chapter, verse 1. What's the first thing Job says? Man born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He goes forth like a flower and fades away. He feels like a shadow and does not continue. You cease to exist. I know there's a lot of italicized words there. Throw them out. They don't fit. Verse 3. And you, talking to Elohim now, open your eyes as one on one as such, like me, Job, and bring me to judgment with yourself. Who can bring a clean out of unclean? No one. I cannot make myself clean. And there's no one around that can make me clean. Now, Job is still at loss for the next several chapters, which we're not going to be going through. His friends get more hostile, and Job gets more hostile back, until finally, his three friends have nothing else to say. And they couldn't convince him that he was a sinner, a transgressor, one who does not pray to God, one who does not even look to God. He's full of iniquity and transgressions and sins that he won't even repent of, because that's basically the accusation of his three friends. But God said, his integrity remains, even when he was seriously ill. He says, his integrity remains. No, that's quite a man, if I can use that terminology, to say, wow, integrity remains. Well, that's the first part of the chapter. That's the first chapter, one or two of the one. I'm bringing out what God said about him in the very beginning. Verse 5. Since his days are determined, the number of his months are with you. You have appointed his limits, so he cannot pass that month. Can't go on. Verse 7, there is more hope in a tree than there is in man. That's his thinking. He's telling us to God. Verse 7. If it, the tree, is cut down, that it will sprout again. And if its tender shoots will not cease, though its root may grow old in the earth, and a stump may die. The sense of water, it will bud and bring forth branches like a plant. A tree has more hope than Job has. Job sees no hope. He's an old man by now. Remember, in those days, they lived quite a long time. They lived 150, 180 years, Abraham did. They could live old. And at this point, he already had seven sons and three daughters. They didn't live at home. They had their own home. Then he asks this question, but man dies and is laid away in the dirt or anyplace else. Indeed, his breath, he breathes his last. And where is he? When a man breathes his last, where is he? He's dead. He goes back to the earth, where he came from. Water disappears from the sea. A river becomes parched and dries up. So man lies down and does not rise. Once you're dead, you are dead. You don't rise up. But that tree, whose stump rots in the ground, and as a little bit of water comes, lo and behold, a new plant comes up. The tree has more hope than a man does. There's nothing there. Verse 13. Oh, that you, Elohe, would hide me in the grave, that you would conceal me until your wrath is past. Just kill me. Get it over with. Put me in the grave, because then your anger will no longer be against me. I will not be your enemy anymore. If I'm dead, I'm dead. I can't fight. You see how hopeless he is? There seems to be nothing there for him, the future or the present, and the past is all gone. There's nothing in the past that he could bring back with fond memories as an old man with him, about his kids, about his grandkids, about his anything you can imagine, his wealth, the men that work for him. They're all dead except the three of them. They all escaped from being killed. That was it. Massive army just went to nothing. That you would appoint me a set time and remember me. This is a question he asked. This is a question he asked. He's asking Elohim a question. If a man dies, shall he live? That's the question. Is why don't you just hide me in the grave until your wrath is, put it in modern English, until hell's finished? Why don't you just take me away? Okay. If a man dies, shall he live? That's a question. All the days of my hard service, not easy service, not wonderful service, not beautiful service, hard, difficult, painful, agony, suffering, losses, and I'll wait till my change comes. He knew there was a resurrection. All right. But he just wanted to hurry up and die and get it over with. It's well known. I mean, everything. So, well, actually, it's in Genesis chapter 2 and 3. We won't go back to today, but God said, I will, I'll bring you back alive. That's why the woman the seed of the woman was going to kill the serpent, in order that death would be finished once and for all. They all believed. There's not assumption of, I'm living in it. I think there's a God. I think, well, maybe there's, but I'm going to believe there is a God. No, they knew God. God talked with them. God does not talk to mankind today. Said the book of Hebrews, how does God talk to us today? Through his Son. He doesn't talk to the prophets. He doesn't talk to the angels. He doesn't send messengers. He talks to us through his Son. Now the question is his Son in charge of the resurrection? Yes. Did they know that their man was going to live again? Yes. Esau, Esau was his great-grandfather. They knew that. Abraham knew that. They knew it because God talked with them and told them. God is not the God of the dead Abraham. God is not the God of the dead Isaac. God is not the God of the dead Jacob. Yes.
Hebrews 11 says Abel, Enoch, Noah, right. Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses. All knew that they'd be resurrected.
Yeah. So, it's our society today, because we live in a world of evolutionary belief. We believe evolution is what God used to create man. billions and billions of years ago, something happened and some gas blew up somewhere, and God says, what's that all about? He waited for billions and billions of years, and all of a sudden, the gas changed into rock. Oh, heaven. That's interesting. Rock. And then billions and billions and billions later, all of a sudden, water. What? What's that? Where'd water come from? Oh, you know, I gotta do something about this. I gotta make something out of this thing now. All that gas stuff billions of years ago, now I got water, I got earth, I think I'll make things out of it, right? And billions of years later, it took them a long time to make an amoeba, but it worked. See how silly we are? We don't trust God because we don't, as a society, we don't believe God, and they think God is a total 100% joke. They didn't back then. Remember, evolutionary concept didn't start with Adam and Eve. Started around, I think it was 1790 or something like that, pretty close to 1830. When a brilliant scientist, I can't remember his name now. Whom? I can't remember his name. It's I think he was German or Dutch. I couldn't remember which one. But long before we start teaching things in high school or anything else, he brought forth that concept and began to be considered as fact. Anyway, it's a dead issue for me. Okay, where was I at? Verse 16, I guess I'm at. Oh, no, verse 15. And you shall call, and I will answer you, and you shall desire the works of your hands. Okay, now he just got to saying you desire to kill it, or destroy it. Remember that? We're just reading that, right? So he just wants to die. Get it over with. Remember his wife said, go ahead and curse, get it over with. He said, no, I can't do that, Willie. I can't do it. And, you know, an awful lot of men say, see how dumb women are? No. She lost everything herself. We don't look at her loss. Verse 16. For now you number my steps, but do not watch over my sin. In other words, don't focus in on my sin. Don't do that. Just go ahead and number my steps and I'll die. But don't watch over. Don't keep an eye on my sins and my iniquities, my transgressions. Take your eyes off of that. My transgressions, seal them up in a bag. And you cover my iniquities. Just cover them up. I don't want you to look at them, God. Have you ever thought about that yourself? God, please don't remember. God, still, please forget. God, don't bring this up. He's thinking to God earlier, says, you're bringing my youth up. My sins of my youth, you're bringing them forward. I can't escape them. They once were gone and now they're back. That's how he felt. And continue on. A mountain falls and crumbles away. A rock is moved from its place. Water wears away stone. Well, he must have been a scientist. Anyway. torrents wash away the soil of the earth. And you destroy the hope of man. What is your hope? Verse 19. you destroy the hope of man. That's Job's answer to God, and God has not spoken yet. Now, if you were in Job's shoes, now really put yourself in Job's shoes for, this is 7 days, right? Put yourself in Job's shoes. I said, this man has no hope. He said, a tree has more hope than I do. And so I'm not looking at Job and saying, you stupid, idiotic old man, you shouldn't say those words. For crying out loud, I'd be a stupid, idiotic old man, I probably wouldn't say those same words if it happened to me. But I'm not Job. I'm a whole lot weaker than Job. I would have given up a long time ago. No, I'm just being funny. God destroyed not just Job's presence. He also destroyed Job's hope with his children in the future. He would see no grandkids, no grandsons. He wouldn't be able to be in the wedding thing for his three daughters. It's all gone. He has no money. He is what you would say abject. He broke down to nothing. All his cattle is gone. All the donkeys were taken away, and all the camels were taken away, and all his men were killed except for three. Interesting. One, two, three. Anyway, we come here. So I can understand why Job said this. We're not at the end of the book yet. And sometimes it's easy for us to put accusations against Job like his three friends did, because he said, turned to God and said, do you destroy the hope of man? It did. In his real life, his real being, it was gone. The only thing he had hope was, if I die, will you resurrect me up? That's all he's, quote, hoping he had. His kids are dead. There's no future. His kingdom's gone. It's shot. He's no longer the greatest king of the East. He's a nobody from the East. Worthless. Would you not feel that way? Well, I'm not judging that thought, but I'm saying, put yourself in his shoes. And we can understand Job's anger. So you have brought forth bitterness to me. Oh, did God make him bitter? According to Job, yeah, you made me bitter. You made me upset with you. It's easy at this point. I'm not going to go through any more arguments of the other three guys. It's not the rest of the book. It's quite a bit more chapters in it. But at this point in time, I just want to ask and say something. As we go in, we're going to go right to almost the end of the book next week. And we're going to hear what the young man said. And we'll have hopefully a different paradigm, different viewpoint, that we may understand something of why God did what he did. And he says, last verse here, verse 22. But, talking about man, let's go back here to verse 20 first. You prevailed forever against him, man, and he passes on. You challenge his, change his countenance and send him away. His sons come to honor, and he does not know. They are brought low, and he does not understand it. Why did God bring the seven sons and daughters low? Do you have any idea? Now, I know there's a lot of theory. Well, they were sinning, transgressing inequities, this, they had a party here, drug and party here, but does it say that? It's easy for us to make sure that God has to be a just God to kill all these kids. No, he doesn't. Righteous get killed. How many prophets got killed? They're righteous. They got killed. Could God stop them? Yes. Did God stop them? No. What about their kids? The Bible very seldom talks about a son of somebody who's a famous one. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, probably it. What great thing from a son that you can think of turned out to be better than his dad, or equal to his dad, or a daughter and equal to her mother, or better than her mother. Do you find it written down somewhere? It's scarce, isn't it? Because life is that way, isn't it? I'm nowhere near like my dad. I'm nowhere near like my mother. God forbid, I'm like Richard. That's what I'm stuck with. All right, that's it. Verse 22, but his flesh will be in pain over it when he does not understand why you killed the sons who honored him. Now this tells us, previous verse, that his sons, his seven sons, came and they honored Job. They weren't full of hatred, bitterness, resentment. They were not having an orgy. They were not doing anything except in having, quote, a festival. How many times you guys held a party? That wasn't a party where God was there. Well, I mean, it wasn't a holy day. How many times you had gone to a party that God wasn't part of it? You probably don't want to talk about that. Anyway, but nonetheless, here on this chapter, we're seeing that Job is seeing something. His sons came to honor, and he doesn't know why they wanted to honor him, but they came to honor him. I feel when my kids honor me, I look and I say to myself, okay, thank you for honoring me. Why are you doing that for? In my mind, in my heart, my innermost being, why are you honoring me for? Just because God said so? No, it really is honor. And I'm stuck with words. Sometimes there are times that I was almost in tears when they all came to honor me. I felt I should be down there honoring them. That's how I felt. But that being said, we don't have a negative thing against the sons of Job. Irregardless what some Christian scholar says, that they were full of sin and iniquities, and they kept something they should not have been doing. Doesn't say that when Job turns around here in this particular chapter and says, they honored me. Wow. Honor your father and your mother? I wonder where they heard that from. Hey, the Ten Commandments weren't even given yet. Or were they? Did he know? How much did he know? But his flesh, to be Job's flesh, will be in pain over it. Because why? They're brought down low and they no longer are. And his soul will mourn over it, the loss of his sons. Does that make sense to you? These are not just words of worthless words. They're words of a man who is in pain. A man who lost an awful lot. And he wants some answers. And his three friends have been trying to give him all the answers. But in all their answers they're giving him, if you keep on reading it, is judgment, condemnation. You're a hypocrite. They actually called Job a hypocrite. You keep reading all about those guys. That was his friends. They called him a hypocrite. You know? Pretty strong words, don't you? They had no idea what God was after, why God was going to do it. And sometimes in the 21st century, we sometimes don't understand why God had this preserved for us today. Because that's a bunch of, you know, Eastern people. They're dead a long time ago. What do I care about what God did to them for? I care about whether or not I have a job tomorrow. Oh, my, I have to fix my pump. Water pump. I have to do, this is more important to my life now, because I have to make sure that, that I clean up my mess. Or whatever I have to do. Why should I care about Job for? Why should I waste a moment of my life looking at Job and what God has to say to him and what God is saying to us? What God basically is saying to a man by the name of Richard Agee. Why are you telling me this for? That's how I look at the Word of God, by the way.